Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's a Monday. Monday after the Super Bowl. Maybe you call it the Super Bowl. But it's a Monday. And every day, in every way, you thank God for another day. And my mother says, hold in your right mind. Our iconic opening prayer song is legendary John Coltrane's Dear Lord. With that, go into prayer. After that, we'll go into sports and death. Trust in God. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And we thank you, Lord, for those things we so largely take for granted. We thank you, dear our God, for all honor to you. We ask that you bless our family and our friends. It's my beloved family, my beloved Elkin family in Brazil. Virginia. More important, Lord, we just thank you for being our God. And we just want to take this time to pay homage to you. We have done and sinned, which is our Lord and Savior. Once again, the Lord, we just thank you, Lord, for those things we've already taken for granted. Food on the table, clothes on our back, eyes to see, feet to walk. We just want to take this time, Lord, so we love and thank you. That you've blessed all of us. We've done and sinned, Jesus. And with that, time to get into sports and death. And the gentleman who usually opens for us, Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Rooney, he's recovering from a five-part surgery. We want to just let him know that we are with him in spirit in our prayers, and he soon will be back with us here on Sports and Death Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. We also take this time to welcome in another Black History Month. And I always say, wow, the shortest month of the year, but it's Black History Month. And in doing so, there's some iconic figures whose birthday is this month. Jim Brown, legendary Jim Brown. And Bill Russell. Jim Brown and Bill Russell, close friends. Eddie Murray, greatest pitcher in the history of baseball. Brown, the greatest football player ever. Bill Russell, the greatest Celtic ever. Roy, pretty boy Mayweather. Roberto Alomar's birthday is month. And the all-time home run king, a right-handed batter, none other than Cameron King. And we also salute Sonny Hike. And on the 10th of month is the greatest boxing mind of this generation, one and only, Brian B. Boyd. Got to put that in there. That's change that thing. Now with that, Wonder. And let's get back to Sports Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Let's get to the crew. And we're going to talk basketball. We're going to talk football. We're going to talk. And, wow. Booster. A little basketball here. What's the story in this night? How'd they make out?
Who's that?
The Knicks.
So far, so good. They're doing pretty good. They lose. I know they were losing.
Oh, you have the final score for us yet?
No, not yet. No.
Yeah, okay, but I know they were.
J.R. Smith was having a heck of a game. They had a 7-point lead. That turned around the other way. Looking for, we got double by Howell will be joining us as long as the Mr. 411 NFL 411. Lady A should be joining us. Who's the.
I was going to give you some news of some updates. As you know, David Stern is gone from commissioner after 30 years as NBA.
How many years? 30 years?
30 years, since 1981. Now, Adam Silver will be taking his place. As you know, David Stern's gone, so we'll see what happens this time.
I remember meeting David on a couple of occasions. I remember when the book came out for the 50th anniversary of the 50 Greatest Players, and I had went over and had asked him to autograph the book. And I remember when he said, thanks for asking for my autograph. Thanks for asking me, and he seemed to be very popular, both somewhat with the powers that be and by
the owners.
The owners and by the players. You know, he seemed to be a guy that everybody seemed to get along quite well with a long time. Remember when he came in, people said, who is David Stern? At the time, they were saying, why was he making so much money? But long time, long reign.
Yes, he has.
Commission, if I'm correct, I think he had the longest reign of any commissioner in the NBA history.
Yes,
he always popped up at the right time, it seems, to a certain degree, interjecting what had to be interjected.
There was always been good times and bad times for him. Almost ended the season. Remember that year I had the update on that strike? Almost ended the season.
Well, you know, you had that year, too. I always said this. It looked like that once the players went on strike, the league was never the same. Nobody ever talked about it, but it used to be every night in the NBA. You'd be Seattle 102, Denver 100. And it seemed that the players never offensively got back to where they were from an offensive standpoint of view. You had a lot of games that had college scores, 89, 77. You never heard that. I mean, you may have a night where one team scored 102, one scored 89, but you didn't have so many double-digit games, it seemed to be. I think that's a stat I like people to check, but you didn't have so many 89, 83, 99, 87, 99. You always had, it seemed to me, that always, the winning team always scored 100 points. It just seemed the players just never got back on track from that perspective. Yeah, and like I'm saying, we're looking for
I got some more NBA news.
Let's have it.
You know, Andrew Bynum's got signed with the Pacers, so that's going to help the Pacers a lot. They got two big men, Roy Hibbert, and now Bynum. As Bynum get himself together, Indiana will definitely be a threat in the Eastern Conference.
And people talk about Bynum. Why would he not get himself together, and what has been the problem that he's not been together? I mean, you keep hearing about Bynum get himself together. I mean, what seems to be the problem? He was an integral part of the Lakers.
Playing time. He ain't been playing. He's been upset. That's the reason.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with a guy that's
no. I got no problem. He got two championships. He got a championship ring. Hey, I got no problem.
I have no problem with a guy bitching about playing. What about you, Harold?
Nah, I ain't got no problem with that at all. I mean, I don't understand Bynum. I mean, he's a good player, but he looks like he gets into those ruts, you know, where he just can't score. He just can't do nothing. One night he comes out and looks like Hercules. I just don't understand him, but he's not consistent. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. He's not consistent. You don't know what you're going to get.
And this is the boxing analyst we're talking here. How you doing, Mr. Howell?
I'm doing fantastic, sir.
Gentlemen,
guru right there now.
Yeah, well, hey, boxing. You know, I tell you, so, you know, me and Lady A were talking, man, and let me tell you, you know, Harold acts like that, you know, couldn't nobody, can't none of these guys fight, and you know, like the guys in his era. And it hit me today as I walked across the street, Harold. I said, you know what? Harold's right. I met this young kid today, Mike, and he took me back, really, you know, and he was talking about he didn't understand the lopsidedness of the Super Bowl to the point that after it got to a certain score, you know, Why didn't they just stop? Like a mercy. I said, well, you know, Mike, they can't do that. I mean, because there are too many people paying for commercials. I mean, less than you once paid $4 million for commercial, and they didn't run it. So you got to run the commercial. You know what I mean? You may be, you may be thinking, well, dang, nobody saw it with the score that high. But what got me was I've got to get his, he gave me his email address. I got email a couple of years. What got me was his insight. When I asked him, you know, when we were talking, you were talking about football players, and I had to school him on Jim Brown and Gale Sayers. He was talking about the other Jerry Rice. So he's like, well, the other great ones. Well, Art Monk had the all-time record at one time, right. The great Charlie Taylor, as well as Art Monk. You know, there's Joyner. We go back into the day, Gene Washington, who converted from a quarterback in college to an end. But, you know, the elite ones, Monk had the all-time record. You know, Charlie Joyner, Charlie Taylor, who came up as a running back and then converted to the Lakers, as did the great Bobby Mitchell, the first African-American to play for the Washington Redskins. He was a running back, and he went to this mission. And I was telling about, you know, Jim Brown, Gale Sayers, and he was like, well, and the two things that struck me so much about him was, he was not one stuck into the players of his era being the greatest of all time. And I said about me, he said, oh, man, you know, they said, no way Mabel could be the regular Durant. And he talked about, and I asked him, well, I said, well, then who do you think is the greatest basketball player? And this stunned me. This stunned me to a certain degree. Not to say, but I was just really taken back. He's Oscar Robertson. And I think there's someone needed to be said about the mindset of this young man is to say Oscar Robertson. He said Oscar, you know, from all around statistical standpoint of view, and I was just taken back by his willingness to learn. As I started talking, you could see, could you tell when somebody's listening or not? And then the ability to not be caught in a time warp of things that his athletes would have bet, and then to acknowledge an Oscar Robertson. I was trying to think of the football players that he was talking about. And to acknowledge, and even when I said, well, you know, you have to understand, like, that people, you can't stop a football game, and you can't stop a professional game like that, and in the wake of the fact that if you could, you really couldn't, because people are paying this astronomical amount of money for commercials. And then Panama, Andres Collins, the owner of one of the best barbershops, but he said, well, no, he did. He says, you know, there's always the outside chance that a team can come back. And so we just want to say hello to Mike. Like I said, we're wishing the birthday greetings to the host of other African-American athletes this month and Black History Month. Like I said, Jim Brown, read Jim Brown's book. And Jim Brown said something in his book that was so profound. He said, you know, I think he said the most defining moment in his football career was when Paul Brown put him in a game and he broke off and ran a 40-yard touchdown. And he said, and Paul Brown walks over to him on the sideline and said, you're my fullback. And it's a great book, Out of Bounds. I had this book here for the longest time. You get a book to put up on the shelf. I'm waiting for your book to come out, too. I got to write something, too. And it was just really really something. Yesterday, Super Bowl, first time in, I think, 20 years where you had the number one offense against the number one defense. nothing seemed to go right for the for the Denver Broncos, Harold. You know, I like Denver. I thought Denver's defense was a little underrated. And I thought Seattle's offense. And I got to get a call to John Kane. I got to get a call in. He called today. And Marion Boykin talked about this, too. And I really meant to get Kane to join us. And, you know, Marion said, for all intents and purposes, we got Mr. NFL 411 here. For all intents and purposes, the MVP of that game yesterday was Russell Wilson, the second black quarterback to win a Super Bowl championship. And Marion talked, too, and you're talking about Marion Boykin, Marion B. Boykin, black, audacious, being a brother. How, okay, so you don't give it to one African-American that should get it, but you give it to another, and that's somehow, you give it to the one that you want, the one that you favor. I remember when Ricky Henderson won the MVP, there was always talking about what a great year Cecil Field had. He had 50 home runs, and maybe for all intents and purposes, he was the MVP. Well, Cecil had the same kind of year the next year, and again, the award to Calvin Ridley Jr., who was on a last-place team, and not one utterance of how the award was sort of not given to the right people. And Ryan said he felt that, you know, that the winner of the MVP, Jones, if I'm correct, was that he should have said, hey, you know what, this belongs to Russell, or you know what, this belongs to the whole defense. I thought, Marion, you know, you got to forget that, hey, Marion, you know, people are not, you cut from a cloth uniquely by yourself. You know, there are no more people with the mindsets of him and Larry, Harold, you know, not old school. Forget that's the school. It's the school. You two hoops are from the school. And it just, and I understood somewhat, and I talked to Ken, I would have understood giving it to the defense, to the defense, but not period. One guy, because if you look at the score was 43-8. Okay, so the first 2 points, the offense got gave away by Denver. And then he threw an INT. That was another 7 points. So that's 9 points that they got that the offense didn't do. Then they got another 7 points on the kickoff return. So you're talking about 16 points that the offense had nothing to do with, and then they got another touchdown off of some defensive play. So I could see that if you had given it to the defense. But there's no question, Russell, two TDs, over 200 yards, no INTs, and you know, well, we got the NFL 4-on-1. Your thought on that, C-Wings, did you agree with the, I mean, I would have thought somehow the whole defense, but just one defensive player?
I mean, definitely agree with you, Doc. Should have been the whole defense, but unfortunately it doesn't work like that. They gave it to Michael Smith. definitely it was the defense that won that game. I mean, they were all over Peyton Manning. They took him off his rhythm. They put pressure on him, which took him off his timing, and basically, you know, just took him off his game. I mean, the comfort level that he enjoyed throughout the season that allowed him to throw the 55 touchdowns and over 5,400 yards during the season, he looked lost out there yesterday.
He was a lame duck out there, man. It was duck season for him. That's what that was.
He was basically playing like his brother Eli.
Worse.
You know, getting pressured, getting hit, knocking off his timing,
running,
you know,
running.
His patches, his passes were tipped, to be picked off. I mean, Seattle, they played like a team possessed.
Yeah,
they definitely kept everybody off their toes. I mean, even I myself covering the you and myself and Eric covering the Jets there. I had to obviously go for an AFC team. I thought that Peyton was going to pull it off.
I did
but,
too.
You know, being 11-12 and 1-2 in the Super Bowl, I mean, this doesn't take anything away from him. I think being probably the best quarterback, especially with the numbers that he put up, a lot of the records that he broke, his completions set a record yesterday. A Super Bowl record for the amount of completions. But it just goes to show you that anything can happen any given Sunday. As Hoops to always tell you, that I always tell him when he tells me that the Broncos, they beat his Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's right.
Tim Tebow was there.
That's
but
right.
That doesn't make Tim Tebow a superstar. It doesn't make him a great player. It doesn't make him a good player. And it shows that no team even picked him up. So I think my hat definitely off to the Seattle Seahawks. Like you said, the second African-American quarterback to win the Super Bowl.
No, Wings, you don't think, and the Tebow situation is one I just still say that I just thought he should have got the opportunity to fail, and I think he and you have to salute him in the fact that he came in and was willing to do anything to win. You know, guy's a quarterback. You know, you put him on a kick return team, you had him doing the Wildcat, and to this date, you know, he when he came here, he had done something that we haven't done in a while. So good to talk to Rex the other day. I don't know, do you have an interview with you, Wings?
No, we have technical difficulties with that,
okay.
But
so, okay, yeah,
I agree
but,
with the teams. Tim Tebow, he's not a quarterback. He's set on being a quarterback in the NFL.
Here we go.
I said that a long time ago.
It's hard for the guy not to be set on a quarterback
because
he had success in college. Hold on. He had success in college. Okay. He had success
college,
in the college.
And
the guy won the Heisman Trophy.
And a championship.
I'm going with all these things. I understand where you're coming from. Let's understand where he's coming from.
But when you put where someone's coming from, you also have to mix that with reality. And I watched
We're not concerned about reality. We're concerned about the thing.
Reality is reality, Doc. And he doesn't deserve to be a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, but who's the – I mean, I love this. The reality is he took his team to the playoffs. We got no –
And won the division. And won the division.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's right.
See, I mean, that's reality.
Made a believer out of me.
When you have a coach like Belichick that can't use you on a roster – that says a lot, and you look at a team like the New England Patriots, who has the toughest and most intense, not only defensive packages, but probably the toughest offensive packages
to learn in the league.
I think
that there's a lot of you saying that supports your case, and I think there's a lot of what I'm saying supports mine. And you know, until the guy is given the chance to fail, and there's another thing I want to bring up too. I was not 100% happy, and me and the Hoops are talking about this. I wasn't 100% happy with Rivera getting Coach of the Year. I thought that the guy that should have got it was Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
I could understand Rivera, but you know, Cincinnati, you know, okay, you're the guy. You're our genius. You're our guy. I thought the first Belichick lost Hernandez. Then they had to wait for the big tight end to come. Then the big tight end got hurt and left again. Then he had the final running game, okay? Then he had to find some guys to go the ball to. Guy won the division. I think he did a better coaching job. Rivera,
yeah.
His team came back and won some big games. I think he blew it. He should have found a way a long time, course of the season, to put Cam more into a rollout position over and over, and he lived up his defense. But, I mean, you're the guy, so what do you say? I think for my money, and the same thing was Hoopsie here, I thought Belichick should have been Coach of the Year.
I mean, it's definitely an argument there for that. I think when you look at it, to turn a team like the Panthers around like that
mm-hmm.
and have them go on that run, when you look at the overall picture, obviously Belichick, there's no comparison. But
mm-hmm.
You look at what Rivera did in the Carolinas to go on that long run like that. They had the longest winning streak at home. But the Panthers. When you have a team like the Panthers, and even Cam said that. He said that, you know, he learned. He didn't have the type of playoff experience going into the postseason. And he was saying that it was such a fast game. He was thrown off about it when you get to the playoffs. So
that's what he said.
I agree with you on that point, you and Hoopster. But
I have another choice for
that
Coach of the Year, Doc.
I still think Rivera deserved it this year. Overall, Belichick does. He's a much better quarterback, been coaching a lot longer. Definitely his schemes on defense and overall how the teams work. There's no comparison. Winning the division so many different years. The only time that he didn't win is when Brady was hurt.
Right.
Brady was hurt. And when you talk about teams such as dynasties, New England has to be up there.
Oh, of course.
You don't have those type of teams that you had in the 80s and 70s and stuff like that with Pittsburgh and and the 49ers. Just,
Miami,
just
Dolphins.
Based off of the,
Miami Dolphins.
The salary cap and stuff like that. And so you won't see teams like that dominance you've seen in those years, those decades, just based off the finances, the X's and O's.
Mm.
But also, one thing the media didn't report, I mean, not on a large scale, when Malcolm Smith was given a post-game interview, some unscrupulous individual ran up to the mic, he got on, and went on a rant about 9/11 and the government being involved.
That's amazing. You look at the security that's supposed to be, and it just shows once again, you know, if you're the complexion of the connection, you know, it just works. I mean, you just have to wonder, and I take my hand off, the guy you seen straightening the mic was one of the great PR men and the great human beings in this business, in this world. The great Harvey Green, he's head PR man of the Miami Dolphins. He at one time was the head PR man of New York Yankees. Him and Jeff Idelson were the last two great class acts of PR for the Yankee organization. It's kind of understandable why they're not there, because they're just really class and great guys. But it was good to see Harvey. And so the guy that you saw straight out the mic and everything was none other than the legendary PR man of the Miami Dolphins and the former great PR man of the New York Yankees, Harvey Green. And, you know, it's frightening when you see how close he got to not only the MVP, but to be in that position, it's just, you know, you just have to ask your question, you know, what the heck is going on? And then again, it's we kind of, as we go into Black History Month, we kind of know what's going on. There's no way, shape, or form an African-American remotely, best in Barney's attire or Lord Taylor, could have gotten that close. And you just, now that's the thing you're looking at from a security standpoint of view, is that how in the world did that happen? And here, 2014, and here, the city where 9/11 initiated security across the world, how the heck did that happen? And I haven't seen any remarks or follow up on that at all. I mean, that's the question that has to be asked. I haven't, you know, and I'm pretty sure had this been a person of color, you'd have heard about where he was from, you heard about how dumb he was, you heard about he was a class clown in the fifth grade. You heard about he was kicked off the basketball team, but it's just, in the words of Harold Weston Jr., sad and touching. Doc Stanley, Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio, the Trust and Guardian Network. We're talking about yesterday's Super Bowl game. We got our own in-house guru. Okay, we got a chance to talk to Coach Ryan, got a chance to talk to other Jet players. What's the consensus now? I know you really feel good. Your guy is close to Coach. You feel good about the extension. What does that say? I mean, there was talk, you know, he wouldn't make it. They gave him a year. What is that saying in overall picture of his career and how they feel about the Jets? Ryan got the extension. What does that say?
It definitely goes to show that the faith that the ownership, Woody Johnson, he has in Rex. It shows the faith that the team, the players, how they fought. When Rex, it was reported that Rex did tell the team members that he felt that he was going to be fired at the end of the season, and how the team rallied to, you know, just end the season off at 8-8. They were definitely expected as a whole to finish somewhere between 4-12, maybe another 6-10 season like that. But it just goes to show how Ryan put together a solid defense, which he has for most of his coaching career.
That's been
his hallmark.
Yeah.
You know, and I do just wanted to divert a little bit. Just wanted to, on behalf of Doc and the panel here, we offer our condolences to Terry Bradshaw on the loss of his father down in Louisiana. His father died at the 86, and we reach out to his family and offer our deepest condolences, and we're sorry for your loss.
And fortunate that family, that's why, you know, he's here. He's the man that handles the football. And is that apropos that you said that? Because as a football mind. There's nobody pro con that can compare you. And I just thank you so much. And you were the one that handed that card to Coach Ryan. And you know, Bradshaw was the first quarterback to win multi Super Bowl championships. And we said, well, you know, a lot of y'all you saying, well, his dad was 86. I remember what the late great Art Rush Jr. told me. I'm sitting ringside with Art at the Terry Norris Sugar Ray Leonard fight. That was the first time Ray Leonard had ever fought in the Garden. The first time he would ever fight in the Garden. And Art had told me that his mother had passed away, and we talked a little bit, and that's when we had started our friendship. He became my last great mentor. And my second great mentor of radio. The first was legendary iconic Hal Jackson. The first one was the late Dr. Frank Bannister, and not at all late. And I said, well, you know, I'm sorry to hear about your mother, you know. And then you know, we talked about her age, and she said, hey, you know, it's my mother. You know, whether she's 100, as like you said, you know, it doesn't matter how old he is. It's dad, it's moms, and you only get one of them. And you definitely, you feel the sting. You feel the sting.
Yeah,
I had talked. Talked to Coach Ryan. Once again, reiterated our sympathy, wishes, and support and prayers to him and the losing of his mother. And I was with a young lady, and we're going to talk about them too later. Super Bowl party on Saturday. I got to pull her card out here too. She's right here, Christine Gilbert, and she is she's a territorial manager, pre-funk. To wake up, refresh it. It's a herbal drink. You take it before you start digesting the alcohol, and you won't want it with a hang-up and stuff. But the girl, the model there, she said, you can't wait till you have eight of them now. You know, you got to kind of jump in there pretty early and stop it. And she talked about losing her father, how her father had passed away in her arms. And she talked about how it was a long time for her to just be able to get up. So more or less to, you know, physically walk and stuff again, and she's finally doing it, and we understand. We understand that. And you know, it's going to take some time. It is your parents. And then you, no matter what age, but you understand what the Bible said, you know, it's appointed upon man for once to die, and then the judgment. My mom's always said, she's 85, she said, you know, you realize, you know, when you come here, you got to leave. There's other great line, you know, life is a dead-end street. And that's when we always open up. The dear Lord, that just reminds you that those in Christ, I went to a funeral one time. I remember the classic line that the gentleman said. He said, you know, those in Christ, death is not a period, but it's a comma. And the lady who's the number one boxing mind of her time, period, we happen to have the one and only incomparable Lady A, we're going to stay with the center of 411, because he's got to go back in the studio. So how much longer can you stay with us, and what else do we know before you have to get back to the studio? Seattle, two things here. Everybody can jump into. I mean, they got to be healthy. Can they repeat? And this is a big question, Mr. NFL 411. What does this do to the legacy of Peyton Manning? You know, I'm saying, I said, you know, he was playing like his brother was in there. People are going to take things away. I remember that I'll never forget watching the game and in Indianapolis. They said number 18 would never be number 19, being a great Johnny Unitas. So Jim Brown said was the greatest quarterback he played against. What did this do yesterday? I mean, they were discombobulated. They got runs. So does this take away any? Think from the greatness of him, a five-time MVP. Nobody's won it more than three. The guy with the most touchdowns in one season, the most. Does this take away anything? This just one game? Does this dismantle Mount Peyton ceilings?
Well, it. I don't think that it takes away from his legacy. It just shows that even though with all his greatness, it puts a question mark on his ability to win in the big game on the big spotlight. Mm-hmm. Me and Hoopster talks about that, and we always go back to Jim Mora in the Indianapolis Cup playoffs. Are you talking about playoffs? So definitely, I mean, you can't take away from what he
what he does. I mean, I still think he's the top quarterback. I don't think that winning Super Bowls all together defines someone's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about Andre Reed is from the wide receiver from the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Made
my buddies,
it. Congratulations
my buddies,
to him and the other inductees, Michael Strahan, and the rest of the guys that made it into the Hall of Fame this year. It doesn't. I mean, you look at Dan Marino.
Real quickly, one of the great quarterbacks ever. It's amazing that the two names you remember have to be New York guys. You know, just amazing, right? We remember Strahan, remember Andre Reed, and that's the guys we'll get around to. Okay. It doesn't take away from his legacy. Okay. There was some talk of the possibility that maybe he has played his last game. Maybe the injuries will set in. Maybe he won't be as physically healthy as next year. This could be his last game. This could be his last season. What's inside track on that, and what's your feelings on that, Mr. NFL 401?
He has the part of his contract, and he's due to make $20 million next season. He is required to receive an evaluation and examination on his neck on the off season, which I do expect him to be back. But in all intents and purposes, I believe that this may be his last Super Bowl hurrah. You look at the salary caps and the different free agencies and things like that, as opposed to the Seattle Seahawks, where they didn't put a lot of money. They're in sort of a good position where they didn't have to put a lot of money into the quarterback position. I think Russell Wilson is slated to make, because of his rookie status and the bargaining agreement, is slated to make less than $1 million. The season after next is where he will make his big money. So they will have that money to spend to give a couple of other players there that do some, you know, big money. But Peyton Manning, I think, for all intents and purposes, the same way I think with the New England Patriots, his days of winning the Super Bowl are done behind him.
Who's better? You talk about the guys on the big show. Prime time, you know, Brady has won more championships. Bradshaw has won some. Joe, who's better between Brady and Peyton Manning? Brady has beat him more. Does Brady perform better on the big stage than Peyton does? And if so, why?
I mean, you could even put Eli in there as performing better.
Wow.
In the Super Bowl than Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, he got the two rings and,
he's not
a better quarterback. He's not a better quarterback than Peyton Manning. I don't even think Brady is, even though he has more championships. Mm-hmm. Just to see how Peyton Manning reads the defenses and moves the ball. Each one is better in their categories, but I still think that Peyton Manning trumps the previous two quarterbacks that I mentioned. Just the numbers that he put up. Look at the numbers Dan Marino put up, and he never won a championship.
Now, I was stunned by Marino. Doc Stanley Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust and Garvey Network. They're all here, the legendary hoopster, double barrel, Harold Weston Jr., the first lady of boxing and sports, Lady A, and Mr. Netball 411. I was amazed. You know, first year in the league, Marino went to the Super Bowl, lost. And I remember the Minnesota Vikings. We're talking about Randy Moss.
Chris Carter.
I mean, and they said, listen, you know, all you have to do is fly in and play the games. I've never had a chance to ask him that. I haven't ran into him in a while. And I would like to ask him why he didn't do that. I don't know why guys are so hung up on playing with one team. If anybody in the panel has a football question, let's get it to Nancy before he runs out of the studio. But I was just taken back by his refusal to go to Minnesota. You would have thought a host of reasons. First of all, an outstanding team. Second of all, an outstanding defense team. Third of all, an outstanding coach. And the throw to Carter and Moss. I didn't understand the reluctant, and it was the indoor stadium, I believe, at that time. I just, it's something I would have ever seen him and get a chance to ask him why he did that. I remember I asked Barry Bonds one time, you know, what happened with free agency with the contract that the Yankees offered me. He said, yeah, they offered me a contract. You know, he said, but it was a contract I couldn't take. So that's quite amazing. Lady A, Harold, Hoops, anybody got a question for Wings about yesterday's game of football? Where he runs
yeah,
out
I want to know who the Jets going to draft.
Well, I definitely think the – and that's something, Doc, that that Rex Ryan brought up as far as the offseason. And as we know, the draft is coming up in 3 months. It's being held in May. I think you're going to see the Jets – You have to look at a combination of free agency, who's going to be out there this year. The draft is going to be a wide receiver deep. You got a couple of good quarterbacks coming out. The biggest name, obviously, Johnny Manziel, who, and I'm going to be the first one to say here, right on Sports and Death, for our listeners, our panel, that Johnny Manziel will not be a long quarterback as far as his longevity in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to last just the way that his size. Not to take anything away from a small quarterback, because you can look at Doug Flutie. You can look at Russell Wilson.
Okay, back up. Now, you're talking about small quarterback. And the thing that you're talking about, too, I remember – I was talking with I forgot who I was speaking to, and they said, you know, guys, when they come from college, they have to adjust to the pace of the pros. Why was Flutie, as a little guy, able to stay in the NFL as long as he did, Cincinnati?
I mean, obviously, he's definitely a running quarterback. It was different then, too. I mean, you look at Drew Brees, and we talk about
Drew
this
Brees
all the time,
monster,
Doc. His ability to look over the linemen. And it's funny when you slow the game down,
you'll actually see
him kind of stand up on his on the front of his feet and throw. Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you the athleticism and the raw talents that these guys have. Even Russell Wilson, these guys are small, but when you look at Johnny Manziel, he's going to have to learn that football is just like any other professional sport, as opposed to college. It's the best of the best playing the best of the best, as opposed to college. I mean, less than 1% of college athletes make the pros. And when you get a sport like football, you got so many more athletic, bigger guys. And that was one thing that Michael Strahan had got together with a lot of other players about recruiting football players straight out of high school. I mean, you don't get that in the NFL for the most part. I mean, it's a totally different sport.
Has that ever happened? Has it ever happened, Wings?
Not that I know of anyone coming directly out of high school.
No,
Not only in the
NBA.
Well, it might have happened back in the 30s or 40s.
And you have
don't
that
know, but
in
that's
NHL,
just...
too. Not in professional football. I mean, you just look at the size of these guys from college. Matter of fact, I sent you that video. I'll have to pull that up again. There's he's a high school running back. The guy's over 400 pounds. He's like 420 or something
running back?
Like that. The guy's a monster. I'll have to pull up his name and send you that video again. The guy's a monster.
420-pound running back?
Running back. 420-pound running back. High school kid from South Pacific. I mean, massive guy. It takes – I've never seen anything like that before. I don't know if he'll ever make it into the NFL like that. He's not as quick, but I've seen his high school videos. The guy's just massive. He's bigger than the refrigerator Perry. Never seen anything like that in my life. But I'll get back to you and our listeners on that. But as I go, congratulations once again to also Pete Carroll, who was fired by the New York Jets. And they hired Rich Kotite.
Told you.
And you know.
he finally got, and he is the second oldest coach behind Tom Coughlin, even though he doesn't look like it. Second oldest coach, active coach coaching in the National Football League. My hat off to the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, Malcolm Smith, and the rest of the Seattle Seahawks, and basically not only manhandling the Denver Broncos, but basically bringing their 12th man, the fans, who were very loud. That was, you know, obviously we always say that the Super Bowl fans are corporate fans. No, that was the 12th man yesterday. I mean, you heard it from the first snap.
Well, I remember a Denver fan talked about the how in fact, the fans in general said that it was the loudest crowd, I believe, in the Super Bowl history so far. They really liked the idea of New York. I've always dismissed the 12th man thing. I mean, you got to play it on the field. And I just think you know, what happened, in, you know, people, what sold the Super Bowl was that coming here, you got a chance to see New York because the game was played in Jersey. And that's what really sold the Super Bowl. And they could thank God that yesterday's weather turned out to be really, really nice. Because it's still ludicrous to play a Super Bowl in a cold weather environment, and it's even more so ludicrous if that cold weather environment doesn't have a dome. But it worked out very well for them yesterday. And one guy started talking about, well, it's starting to rain in Seattle. Well, you know, bad weather is bad weather to play in for anybody. Well, you come from a bad weather. I remember Jim Brown talked about, you know, in his day, nobody wanted to go to Green Bay. And, you know, and the coach got pissed at you. Somebody said, hey, you know what, I'll send you to Green Bay. Yeah, you know, so nobody wants to play. I mean, you can talk about he plays. Nobody wants to play in horrible weather. And I think the 12th man thing has been vastly overplayed, especially a guy like Manning, who uses a lot of hand signals and stuff. I think what it did show.
They couldn't hear him yesterday.
Yeah.
Huh? That's why Rivera, when he hiked the ball, they couldn't hear him, the noise.
I've got to think there was enough of the Denver fans to kind of balance off the Seattle fans. I mean, Rivera did not be able to
hear.
I mean, I just don't think that was that much of a factor. They just beat him to death. They just beat him to death.
Well,
and everybody
they
talked
about
they whooped on them.
Yeah, I mean they outmanned them and you know they played like I said
they played physical.
Seattle defense was totally different. They did a 360 from when they played the 49ers in the NFC Championship game.
Well,
I think they should have lost for a couple of plays there. You know, it was a couple of bad calls. But that defense there was totally they really showed that they were the number one defense.
You know what I liked about Earl Thomas when they got to have the biggest safety in the history of this game. He went over to check on his friend, and at halftime, the Seattle Seahawks had six quarters of shutout football in MetLife Stadium.
Real quick, Don, before I go into studio, you also had that was the quickest score in Super Bowl history from the bad snap, which resulted in the safety, and also you had the largest age gap in starting QBs at 12 years between Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson. I mean, this was – and also the history of the first cold weather, which I don't think it was that cold. This kickoff
was
somewhere in the
40s. It was nice out.
If you got any questions before we go back in the studio, you got any questions for the football group before we go back into the studio?
No.
But I don't think you're gonna see another cold weather Super Bowl like that. I believe that they picked the best venue for it. I don't see Chicago pulling it off. It's just too cold out there.
Yeah,
I don't see it going to New England. You don't see
you on the money
structure.
You know, it worked.
Oh, Green Bay.
They just don't have the hotel space. You look at New England, which they're in Foxborough, it's about the closest big city, obviously, is Boston. It's about 40 to 45 minutes away from Foxborough. How are you going to move that amount of people There's just no structure for that.
Well, you know,
and
it barely worked here because the stadium was in Jersey, but all the activities were in New York. That's what made it work. They had two states to do it in the state for all the hospitality, and anything at Murray was done here in New York, and it worked. And people last year, you know, said, hey, you know, it's cold weather spot, but I want to go to New York. I want to spend some time there. And that's what really worked for the Super Bowl. And there's not another city in this country or in the world that could pull it off the way New York did. It worked for them. They can maybe talk about it later on, but you're right. This is the only place that it worked, and only worked because of the weather. Had anything happened with that weather-wise, it was kind of, well, it was a little damp on it, but they were successful. They were very successful because they had the whole week in New York, and it worked. You know, me and you were up at Macy's. They had the Super Bowl Boulevard. So it worked, and it worked because it was the game was in New Jersey, but everything that of merit was in New York, and that's why it worked. Once again, validating the number one city in the world, New York, New York. Doc Stanley, Sports Network Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. When we come back, it's the Fisticuffs, Lady A, and Harold Weston Jr. We've got some big fights coming up. It was the fights that happened. How big were they? Whose career is going in and out? We'll be back in a minute. First Lady of Boxing and the own. I will make the maximum history of MSG and the Hoopsa. Come back. We talk here on Doc Stanley Sports and Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard. You know, I heard some that the Denver fans have just got on their planes at Kennedy Airport. I'm only funny. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. And now, let's talk a little about Sweet Science and the sweetest practitioners of the Sweet Science, our one and only Lady A, okay, let's talk about it. We had the big cut by Top Rank last Saturday. Brian Jennings, the new call American, hope somewhat to be any is he really hope your impressions? I mean, he fought a tough Polish kid. What yay or nay? Can he expire to the hype that they're talking about?
I want to say the same thing I said last week, which is that I didn't really see that he was all of that. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what most of the writers are saying, but as far as what I said, I saw, I didn't see he was all of that. Me and Harold on the same page with that one last week.
And going back now, let's go to the fight last Thursday. Mm-hmm. Victor Ortiz hasn't fought for a year. Luis Collazo, a former champion. Wow. I mean,
yeah, I know. I think everybody was shocked about that one.
Yeah.
But it was funny. It was funny because before the fight, I was talking to Cisco about Ortiz. And, you know, I think everybody kind of thought that it was going to probably end up going to decision and it was likely that Victor was going to win. And then I said to him, you know, it was just something that I felt like even at when Dusty and I were interviewing him, it didn't seem like he was really into it, you know. And Dusty stayed and watched him, you know, kind of spar and work out. I didn't really get to stay for that. But to me, I just didn't see he had that, you know, like that vibe, like that he was really into. I think he was more concerned about the Expendables 3 movie and pushing the movie and he not that he didn't answer our questions. You know, he answered everything pretty much straightforward when we asked him questions about, you know, the fight and, you know, what was going to happen on Thursday and, you know, how he kind of had planned everything in his mind. But for some reason, I didn't see, like, he had that fire, you know? And so, like, the night of the fight on Thursday, going into the fight, I said, you know, something about it, I just didn't feel like it was going to go the distance. And Cisco and I were talking about it, and Cisco was like, oh, you know, he was like, he's like, who has Luis Collazo really knocked out? And I was like, I said, I don't know. I just got this feeling. Next thing you know,
boom,
he got knocked out in the second round, 2:59 left. I was like, I could not believe what I was seeing.
Neither did I.
You know, to me, just watching Victor in the ring, he just seemed really tight. He didn't feel he didn't seem like he was comfortable. And Harold and I always say, like, usually you got like a maybe, like, a, you know, you get somebody from maybe rounds 1 to 3 to kind of, you know, kind of get themselves maybe, you know, the early part of round 3, kind of get themselves feeling out the fighter. But he just seemed really tight in the ring. And I guess the only, Harold would probably be able to explain it better, what I'm trying to say.
Well, you said you thought it was a problem of weight. Am I correct?
Weight? No, I never said that.
Wait. No, I thought you said he may have had a problem making the weight or something like that.
No, I never said that. No, I never said that.
I thought so.
No,
okay.
I just felt like in the fighter meetings prior to the fight, I didn't see, like, it didn't seem to me like it was really in. Again, I'm not taking away from Victor. Like, he's always been a gentleman to us here at Sports End Up. But I'm just saying, like, it just didn't seem like he had that fire about the fight. Because even when he was asked, like, he came to the podium to address the press, he didn't seem like he. All he said was, you know, let's just let, you know, our fight, the day of the fight, you don't do the talking. And I was like, okay. You know, it just didn't seem like he was very enthusiastic, you know, going into the fight. I mean, that may not be saying much to a lot of people, but I just didn't see that fire, you know, I usually see with the fighters. Collazo seemed a little bit more receptive when it came to that. But when I saw him the first round in Victor Ortiz in the first round, it just seemed a little tight. It didn't seem like he felt comfortable. But, you know, then again, it was over a year since his last fight. So.
Harold?
I'm going to say this. When you're a quitter, you're always going to be a quitter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And bottom line was Victor Ortiz, he was never a good fighter. He was built up. When he finally got one good fight and he tried to bail out by acting like somebody hit him on a cheap shot and try to win a world championship that way. So, you know, it's always been, I never thought nothing much about Victor Ortiz.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was just an opportunist trying to get, you know, trying to make a few dollars and get through the sport as quickly as he can and do whatever else he wants to do. But being a fighter, he was never on my list at all as being a good fighter at all.
But did you see what I saw, Harold? Did you see that first? Right? It just seemed like he was not. You know, like, to me, you know how, like, guys feel comfortable in there after a certain amount of time? It didn't seem like that first. It just seemed so tight that first round.
And lady, when you up there trying to do movies and you think you're a movie star and, you know, you're doing interviews, the last thing Victor wants to do is be in the ring, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about boxing, and I got to say this, when your mind is in somewhere, if you got 10% or 20% or even 30% of your mind going somewhere else, thinking about something else, and it's not that boxing ring,
That's correct.
And so basically,
another thing you say all the time, Harold, which is another thing that deserves being brought out in front of our fans, is this. Harold, you said it before. When a guy has taken shots like he took, he got his jaw broken in that fight. Remember, he stopped in the 9th round, and he's been knocked down a few times. He gets hit with that one shot. After he's getting hit, he gets hit. Just like the last fight with Lucien Bute, you saw it. They're a lot more hesitant to take those opportunities that are open because of the fact that they've been KO'd before. So it just seemed to me like it just seemed very tight, that fight. And goes back to what you said, Harold. Guys have been knocked down like that before, and they quit. It's, you know, they're just not the same fighters after they've been hit like that.
Right. They just, you know, the wind, you know, that wind. He doesn't have the heart for it no more, and he's scared to get hurt again because, you know, when you get a broken jaw, you know, that's not a funny thing to have.
Harold, you said he doesn't have the heart for it anymore. Was there a chance that he at one time, I mean, you either have heart or you don't have. Are you telling me that he had heart and he lost it? Oh, you said
as long as he's fighting them bums and getting away with it, he felt like Hercules. But as soon as the competition stepped up, then you saw what he was made out of. You got to understand, though, every guy thinks they're tough until they get into it with somebody's tougher. And when they realize, that's when you'll find out what kind of man, what kind of guy you're made out of. You know, like Mike Tyson. Mike was knocking everybody out, cold as a mackerel. He thought he was invincible. Nobody was going to ever beat him. But as soon as he got in there with somebody that was going to hit him back and stay there and say, man, I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to deal with your butt. Then you saw a different Mike Tyson.
And you got to look at it too, Doc. I'm sorry, Howard. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean,
as
long as you're a front runner, you're okay. But as soon as you got to come from behind to win, oh, now we're going to find out what you made out of. That's what come out. I give gratitude to Ray Leonard. When he fought Tommy Hearns, he was losing the fight. But you saw what kind of guy he was when he had to come from behind to win a fight. I mean, this is with you, Muhammad Ali. I mean, you know all the great ones. When things get tough, they dig down deep to try to get out of it. They don't always just win because they got the 100-to-1 favorite to win and know the guy can't fight. They fight because they knew they had fighting a tough guy, and now they got to dig down deep to pull this out. And that's what it's all about.
Well, yeah. Doc, also you got to look at recently, just adding on to what, just to piggyback on what Howard's talking about. He gets knocked down by Mayweather, gets his jaw broken by Lopez, okay? And then you go back and rewind the fight before he fought Berto with Maidana where he quit. Those are all fights that back-to-back. I think he's pretty much done, Doc. I don't think he really could come back from this. I mean, think about it. And now Luis Collazo. There's a lot of fights that, you know, you look at it, he had that adversity. He could have tried to get up or – you know,
well,
or
let,
do
let
something
me,
to fight, and he never did. So that just says something about, you know, him as a fighter. You're talking about at least three or four fights, Doc, that, you know, that were questionable about his heart. And, you know, our fighters remember that. Those are things that fighters remember it, and so do the fans. So
well,
I don't know, Doc. I think he's pretty much over, Doc.
Well, let me tell you this, lady. He's going to come back. After he does this little movie and he does a little premiere, And the movie, whatever the movie does.
Yeah, but what is he
going
to come back to, Howard? You think he's going to come back to tomato cans? What's he going to come back to, cab drivers?
He's going to come back to fighting again because you got to understand, lady, these guys is not no scientists, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're not Einstein, all right? Mm-hmm. They're picking up checks. Listen to what I'm saying. They're picking up $100,000 checks. They couldn't make that money, that kind of money, doing nothing else in life.
Mm-hmm.
In life, they're not that smart to do that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So basically now you got to go out here and work a job, and the man said, well, I'm only going to pay you $10 an hour because you don't have the experience or education. These guys out here go crazy because now they got to live in the real world, and they have no other way or means how to live like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So basically he's going to come back because after he can't get no parts in the movie world, because that's a tough world in itself, he's going to be back. And I'm telling you, he's going to come back thinking that he can do it again. And somebody's going to pick him up and try to give him some more fight.
Here's two things here. I remember what our buddy Larry Holmes once said, it's hard to stop doing the best thing you do in life. People are going to pay you. Lady A, Doc Stanley, supporting the blog, Doc Redder, Trust and Garvin. It's a Super Bowl Monday wrap-up. The also legendary Hooster, the renowned Harold Weston Jr., and Mr. NFL has just left us. You know, at one time, did Victor, does he have any talent as a fighter, Lady A? And you dovetail it, Harold. I mean, does he have skills, Adrian?
On what, fighting?
As a fighter.
I mean, you want to put him in a category?
No, I'm just trying to say, I mean, does he have some talent at all?
Yeah, as long as he's got a guy that he can beat. But if you're putting him in a category to put him with guys that can really fight, no, he has no talent at all.
Lady A?
Listen, you know, I got to agree with Harold. I mean, the guys, if I would say he's a B fighter. I mean, he did beat Andre Berto, but then again, look at Andre Berto now. Where is he today, you know?
Thank you. He's
good fight.
You know, I'll tell you this. You know, people are judging him based on, you know, getting his jaw broken. Listen, it's not easy to finish a fight with a broken jaw. I could tell you that right now, man. So, you know, But his other fights, like the Maidana fight, I still to this day don't understand why he walked away from it. It was just like the way he quit, you know. And, listen, if I'm a fan and I'm paying $70, $60 to see a fight, I think that's totally unacceptable. It's totally unacceptable that a guy could do that and still get paid. It's totally unacceptable.
Well, no, you know, the question here is, what did Golden Boy see in him? He's supposed to have been their next marquee guy. I mean,
right.
What did they see? They had him as the next
Oscar De La Hoya.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Right. They had him pinned as the next Oscar De La Hoya. And honestly, like, to be like if you're classifying him like that, then I have to be 100% behind Harold. You know, I don't see him being all of that. You telling me Oscar De La Hoya? That's like saying the guy's, you know, he's the next. And I think they coined him that just because, just to speak, you know, if I could just speak freely, just because he was also Mexican-American, you know?
Yeah.
But
okay.
That's just like saying the next, you know, Camacho. Really? Are you serious? Do you know how talented Camacho was? So, I just do not see the comparison. Now, if you were to say, hey, do you see him as maybe a B fighter? Okay, all right, maybe. But to put him at a category, like, I'd have to completely agree with Harold. There's absolutely no way. No way.
But now, Lady A, here's a question. This guy is a B fighter. This guy has lost all the big fights. And Harold says he'll be back because of the fact, what else can he do? But, I mean, then you're saying, and once again, if I was to say, the boxing, somebody's going to take this guy back. And that's what you're both telling me.
I think he's done, but, Harold's a promoter. Harold will probably give you a better sense. He's a promoter.
He'll be back because he has nowhere else to go until he gets his head knocked off completely again. And then he'll definitely quit when the boxing commissioner won't let him fight no more. But he'll be back because, like I said, he doesn't have an education to live up to the status of
And that right there that you said is a sad state of affairs. Because if you're making all that money and you can't put it in your mind to have the discipline and the character that you have in boxing to apply yourself and get at minimum a college degree, there's something wrong with you because you definitely got the money to do it. So,
to me,
I'm gonna use the Harold terminology. That's sad and touching.
But understand, the average athlete thinks that way. I mean, half of the basketball players don't go back to college. I mean, you always read about the one
and
or two.
And that's why 70% of all professional athletes are
go
broke.
Ahead, go ahead. Dead broke. Hey, Lady A, you didn't say dead broke. You left that dead broke. And Harold, once again, we're using your line, baby. We're going to cover it. Sad and touching. I mean,
do you have all that money and at the same time make all that money, but you cannot apply yourself? What are you talking? Like, you could be in the ring.
Lady A,
for 8 weeks.
I'm too busy hanging with the fellas, paying $300, $500 for
that's to me is unacceptable.
Because the fact that you don't have the money doesn't apply.
You don't have the money to do it doesn't apply. I can't even begin to tell you how much money I spent on trying to. Let me tell you
something, Lady A. I at one time, and Mel can tell you this, I was trying to help fighters get education. I was starting a program so fighters can go and get tutoring to get their GED and try to educate themselves and get their,
they
you know,
have
get,
the time.
Get some knowledge.
They didn't have the time. They didn't have the time. And
I
tell you what, you know what, Harold? I tell you what, Harold.
Okay.
They didn't want to listen to you. They didn't want to listen to you. You know why they listened to you? Because there's a combination.
I'm going to get bitch off this.
Well, no,
exactly.
They didn't trust you. It was jealousy, or the person of the complexion of the connection was pulling the other way. You know what I mean?
They didn't trust your brother.
Yeah,
these managers
didn't trust
Harold.
Let me tell you Harold. I got this. They didn't trust the brother. Okay? That's about right.
No, but you know, the argument could be made, too. I mean, you got to look at it the flip side, too.
Come on, Lady.
Education is power. By keeping you from gaining knowledge and better understanding of your environment, it's easier for me to control you. That's the best way to control the masses is to not allow people to be educated, you know. So,
Lady A, you would think if you're smart, and I guess these a lot of people are not smart, you would think that saying Harold Weston came from really nowhere. okay? And when he started fighting, making money, he
Golden
took his
Glove
money
champion.
And went
champion.
Back to school and went
Promoter.
Back to school and got an education.
Max
Maker
has
a good guard. And started working to better himself. Maker
five champions.
And, you know, and the point is
Harold
is that
don't know what he's talking about.
You don't
what
know
does
what
Harold
talking.
Know? What does Harold know? He got money in the bank. What does Harold know? Everybody respects him. What does Harold know? He's a Golden Glove champion. What does Harold know? He's a world champion. What does Harold know? He's the only African-American matchmaker in history.
Well,
what does Harold know?
The sad state of affairs is that people fail to realize your brain is more powerful than your fist. So
wow.
Ladies
and gentlemen, this is why I pat myself on the back. This is why I say, dear Lord, thank you for my panel, because I tell you, there is nobody in this world that has a better panel than I have. And like I tell you, Sports in Depth gives you not only an in-depth look at the sports and the players that play the sports, but editorially, Sports in Depth is also the world in depth. And you, I mean, did you hear the lady? Did you hear Harold? You get this no place here, but on Blog Talk Radio, on Sports in Depth, and the Trust in God Will Never, on the Doc, I got to say this, the Doc Stanley Show, two others, I am somebody. These are the people, by the grace of God, who makes me in Sports and Death. Lady A, continue, sweetheart, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, you know, listen, your brain is more powerful than your fist. Half the time when you're in there, it's that's why they call it the sweet science. You have to think when you're in there. If you're not training your mind, okay, and all you're training is your physical body, then you have a problem. You will always have a problem. You have to be able to think before you act. Am I correct? So I just don't understand the logic. I don't understand the logic. Why wouldn't you want to go to school? Why wouldn't you want to better yourself so people don't turn around and steal all those millions of dollars? Oh, that's right, because you didn't know how to read the contract. I don't know.
Well, lady, the problem is that they're men. And certain men don't want to be embarrassed because you got to understand he thinks that because he can fight or he's a champion that he should know more than everybody because he's a champion. But when he goes into a classroom and he can't read, he feels embarrassed. So he don't want to go in there because he's going to be embarrassed because when the teacher says, oh, would you please stand up and read this that paragraph of on page number 2? And he doesn't know how to do
And we're talking right. about the All-American forward on the basketball team. We're talking about the star running back on the college football. We're talking about the star. Hey, Hoopster, come on, Hoopster, come here. You know about this. You would have been elite basketball. You know the stories that they're talking about of the basketball stars who had it and it was gone, Hoopster. I mean, the
and
name's
football
Ellis,
players,
am I right?
Too. Wasn't Dexter Manley illiterate? Dexter
oh
Manley
yeah.
is illiterate too, right? Am I correct?
Oh yeah, hey, 100% correct. And Hoopster, you know yourself in your venue, the guys you've met who didn't know 2 and 2, but they were making millions of dollars. Am I right, Hoopster?
Well, Hoopster's gone.
Hoopster. Yeah, Hoopster's still he's back. Okay, I mean you make the brain more powerful than the hands of the fists and the feet. And I remember, you know, how it's amazing the blueprint that you had there at Madison Square. Doc Stanley Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. Yes, Super Bowl is over. Actually, it didn't really start to a certain degree after the 2 points it got on. And I looked at that game. I said, wow, you know, Denver had a real chance to get back into that football game. They were down only 8-0. A touchdown would have put them right back into the football game. Some people said they didn't understand. But then again, you know, I guess you're going out with your gun blazing, but they didn't understand them going for the 2 points. They got it. We got to take a quick look at our tags.
Doc, that game was over after the first quarter. I turned it off. I changed the channel. I was watching the DVR of some old boxing. Kevin Kelly was on. I was watching some Kevin Kelly fight. I said, you got to be kidding me. After the first quarter, please. I was like, no. I said, it's over.
Kevin Kelly, who was nicknamed the Fletching Flash by the iconic Man Boykin, who celebrates the birthday on the 10th of his month. Man, be Boykin, Black Bodacious. Now, Harold, you worked with Kevin too, didn't you?
No, I did a little something with Kevin, nothing major.
How good was he, Harold?
Kevin was a good kid that wanted to learn how to fight, and he did. He listened and things like that, and he just followed the script that was ever laid before him. And I wouldn't consider him a great, great fighter, but he was a game kid. I mean, he could have went further.
Doc, can I ask Harold a question? I'm dying to ask Harold this question.
Harold, just understand this ain't the Harold Weston show. Okay?
I just want to ask, because I know Harold dealt with a lot of guys, our up-and-coming fighters. Hmm. Harold, Hopkins, should he hang it up right now?
Yeah, he should have been hanging, but Hopkins, but you know, the problem is late, is that Hopkins is in a world today that there's no talent out there. There's nobody.
There you go.
Well, and the reason why, and he's $10, $5 million, $2 million, whatever it is, that's a lot of money. He's another individual that I'm going to say to you, Lady A. He doesn't have the education. He came out of jail. Okay? He cannot be creative and think of any other project to make any money off of. Okay?
Right.
He would not be in his executive position had it not been for Oscar making him an executive in Golden Boy.
If you take these guys out of their environment, and that's a lot of people. You take them out of their environment, they can't do nothing else. They can't do nothing else, so they'll starve to death. So basically, Hopkins is milking the situation as much as he can, which I don't blame him, and make the money that he needs to make, and that's all it is. He can't make no $2 million. Nothing else he can do. He can't even tell you something else he can do, make $2 million.
Well, the reason why I was asking Harold that
for the longest too is that the average athlete, what you were saying is the situation of, I got to remember about the trainer, is that Harold's right. Where else can they go? I mean, well, here's a guy coming up. You got
I was asking Harold that question just primarily because right now, he actually, there's in the light heavyweight division, the guy, the star right now, the hottest guy is this guy Kovalev. And I was like, if he goes in the ring with that guy, he may get knocked out. And I'm like, with his AI, and a couple of guys are like, yeah, but think about it. Hopkins has always been a smart fighter, defensively. He doesn't exert a lot of energy. He's calculated with, when he throws his punches, he's not going to allow himself. I said to myself, yeah, but you know what? If you're getting in the ring, and that's the way you're boxing, and now you get hit, you're getting hit by a guy like this. Yeah, you got to be thinking twice. I don't know, Harold, but to get in the ring with somebody, and know that all bets are off when you go in there, you shouldn't be going in the ring in the first place. You should be going in.
Lady, you got to understand the talent. These guys are not smart today. Mm-hmm. Hopkins is just so smarter than them. He knows so much about the ring. He's not going to get knocked out by these guys. He gets hit with a good shot. He knows how to play the game and survive. Mm-hmm. These guys are not that smart of a fighter to set up a guy like Hopkins and knock him out. The reason why Sugar Ray Robinson and all those guys later on retired, because young guys like them knew how to fight. And when you had a young kid coming up and he was smart and he fought an old-timer and he beats the old-timer up, then the old-timer knows that he can't go no further. But today's time, you ain't got to worry about it. If you're smart and you know how to handle yourself, you can get through this era, because these guys are not smart fighters. And the guys that are working in their corners are not smart either. So, if you keep going the distance and you win it, you're going to keep on doing it. Like I say, lady, $100,000, $500,000, that's a lot of money for education and no skills. You got to understand that.
But Harold, let me tell you, a guy like that, let's say Hopkins makes that much money. How much is he, on paper, how much is he actually bringing home if he does something like that?
Well, Hopkins brings enough money home. I mean, he's now structured where he gives his trainer like 5% or something like that. His trainer's not getting that 10%. And you got to understand, Hopkins
and
don't have no manager.
And taxes too, right, Harold?
He don't have no manager. He don't have no manager.
Oh, so he cut off the middle guy. Okay.
Right. I mean, he has, and there's no middle guy and everything. So So Hopkins is pretty much taking like most of all his money home with him.
Right. And let me ask you this, Howard. How much longer do you think he's gonna be around for?
He's going to milk it until somebody knocks him cold.
Knocks him down. Yeah, okay. Right,
yeah.
I forget that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, he's picking up $5 to $10 million a pop. That's
crazy.
A lot of money.
Right.
I'll still be fighting too right now.
He's probably grabbing the expensive money and he's not, you know, not spending all of that. So he's got that coming in too, right, Al?
Right, he got expensive money and Hopkins is pretty cheap on how he do things because you know he knows where he came from and he's not going to splurge himself out there.
He's got to be frugal. He's probably frugal with his money, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Hey,
what you saying? The guy is cheap, okay? I mean,
he's a smart guy to doing what he's doing. But my point is that he's not going to be like Floyd Mayweather, where Floyd put $10 million on Denver to business, you know, to win.
Hold on. The story on that was Floyd tweeted the day that he didn't do that. He said, you know, I can't control what's said about me and all that kind of stuff. You know, he said, no way in the world I would bet $10 million. He said, you know, the only person I would bet $10 million is would be myself, which is a sure enough guaranteed win. He said, I wouldn't kick that
kind of money out there. And I'm going to tell you, he's a damn liar, okay?
Go ahead, Al.
Because I got people that I know told me that they when they made the bet there in Vegas with the bookie, one of the guys talked to one of my friends and told them that Floyd did it. And they got the money.
Again, this is why, and you heard it here, Sports and Death, okay? And you know, this is the same place where you heard that Bin Laden was taken out. You've heard so many firsts here. Once again, Harold Weston is telling you, hey, and they said, it was Harold Weston, okay? Our late friend Emmanuel Stewart was not at ringside at a fight. They said, hey, he'll be back. He's all right. He's just having some stomach problems. And his sister said the same thing, too. Harold said, hey, uh-uh. Emmanuel is very sick. That's not the 411. And then off the air, me and Harold talked in the week, and Harold told me, I said, hey, Mel, no. Emmanuel is sick, and Emmanuel has cancer. Right, Harold?
Yeah. One thing about this world we live in, no matter what you do, I mean, somebody's going to know you're doing something. And the word going to get out.
And the thing is, too, the way information is so instantaneously obtained these years. Like the last few years, especially now with Facebook and all these other sites coming out. I mean, information is just so quick and you get things so fast now. So the avenues for you to get information are just forget it. You get stuff.
What happened was Mayweather wanted to show up 50 Cent because 50 Cent won $1 million on the Giants when they played, okay? So he put the word out and he made the bet because he wanted to outshine 50 Cent. Unfortunately, his backfired. Okay, he didn't win his game. He lost his game. So basically, but somebody told him he shouldn't have did that, and so he had to reverse it and tell him differently and everything because someone in his camp told him he shouldn't have did that, and that's what happened.
Had he won the bet, he'd been grandstanding parading today how he put $10 million on the world champion on the Broncos.
Right. There you go. Now you know what the deal is. Right. But he made
22.
The bet.
Mm-hmm. We got muscles. We got Lady A and Howard Weston Jr. Talking to Squeak Science. A couple things here. When you were at the fight last week, the consensus is that Victor Ortiz is going to go away and come back. Lady A thinks he's done. Kyle says he'll be back. What's your call? Is Victor Ortiz gone, or is he going to come back to Squeak Science there, Muscles?
I don't think he's gone yet. I don't think the ship has sailed yet. They got money invested in his kid, so I think that, and he's talking about it, he's going to continue fighting. So, you know, he's young. Yes, he's pretty much on his way out from what we see, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe another devastating defeat like he did against Louis Collazo would probably prove that he needs to really hang it up.
And then here's the question too, Muscles. Now, Collazo's victory, does that do anything for him? Does that springboard him toward a title shot somewhere, or does it just have to be a big win a big loss, you know, a big win for him or a bigger loss for Victor. I mean, is this going to springboard Lewis into a title shot? Does it put him back into the boxing picture?
Well, you know, today, a win like this, I mean, Victor Ortiz got a title shot against Floyd Mayweather for his win against Berto. I mean, that's the state of boxing today. You get a big win against somebody or who's believed to be a somebody, you get a big fight, right? But Louis, from what I hear now, they're talking about Keith Thurman and Louis Collazo. So that's on the table right now. And that's actually a bigger test than Victor Ortiz. I mean, Victor Ortiz had a lot going against him in his fight. You know, the kid hasn't fought in 16 months or more. He came from two back-to-back losses, being knocked out by Floyd Mayweather and then being TKO'd by Joseito Lopez for a broken jaw. So he wasn't coming back into this fight on a winning streak. And then rust. Rust is another factor. So Louis had a lot to gain in this fight because of that. But does it make him a key player? We'll see against Keith Thurman if he can pull the same upset like he did against Ortiz. And Keith Thurman has shown so far that he's no Victor Ortiz. So that's actually, if that fight happens, you know, we'll see if he's a key player or not.
You know what tickles me about, you know, these guys when they say they've been laid off or they haven't fought in a year or 8 months or whatever they do. You know, and I look back on when I was off for 8 months, but I was in the military. I wasn't out of the street. I was military. And I came back and fought Vito Antifermo when he was undefeated, right? And didn't have a worry in the world that I knew I could beat him and everything. But here these guys off a couple of months, they're here at home, they're in the States, they have all the training facilities they need to get in shape, but then they're going to blame it on, they've been off for so long and everything.
And Harold, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you fight Antifermo with the flu?
Mammy with the flu.
My bad. I'm sorry, Mammy.
Harry, I'm out of nerves. Just get out of bed. Let me go ahead down to the drugstore. You know what? Let me go down the garden after the drugstore, take the medicine. He boxed Mammy. I wanted to fight. Okay, I got to go home. His autograph interview. I got to get back in bed. Harold, boy, you'll be shaming yourself. My family, watching them. Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God. They're here. The Cisco Kid, Double Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., and the First Lady of Boxing, Lady A. We're talking about boxing. You know, Cisco, we were talking. And you too, Lady. We're letting Cisco kick us off. No, Lady, you started because you can carry this. Cisco, you talked about how Alvarez is fighting Aguno, and yet Leia beat him, and he's not fighting. He's got to get around his shield. I mean, the consensus is that he's fighting the guy.
My thing was Lara actually beat Angulo, and my thing was why didn't they just take Lara to fight Alvarez? Why did they go right to Angulo, who had two losses back to back?
And plus, I was thinking that Angulo had a title, but Lara has a title now too after beating Trout,
right.
Correct? Okay, but I think this fight was made.
There's a reason why they didn't choose Lara, because Lara's too good. You know?
Cisco, that was my line, and hold off the next time, okay?
Hey, Cisco, that fight with Thurman, he's going to really get a test, Collazo, when he fights Thurman, because Thurman's not a pushover, so that's going to be some fight. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, you know, if you look at Louis, his biggest win was his title win. He's never had a win that we could actually look back at and say, you know,
big win.
You know, his loss against Hatton, you know, it could be disputed, but Hatton did fight hard those last two rounds where Louis did it. Mm-hmm. You could say it was a close fight and it should have went either way.
Right.
But Louis didn't win that fight. You know, the fight against Berto, you know,
I think he got jerked that fight. He should have been given that fight.
He got jerked. He definitely got jerked in that fight. Mm-hmm. But if you look at that fight, the last two rounds, he gave it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you look back at that fight, he gave those last two rounds. He started putting his hands down, and Berto started coming back.
Mm-hmm.
In those last two rounds, even though I still think Louis should have won that fight.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
But then again, who hasn't beaten Berto? You know what I mean?
Right.
If you're going to talk about Berto, Victor Ortiz beat Berto. Guerrero beat Berto.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Soto Carras beat
Berto. That's correct.
You know what I mean? They all beat Berto. And all of them weren't that good.
I remember being at that press conference. Richard Schaefer was so assured. He's so confident. But Harold, you said something too. And you got to start questioning the ticker of Andre Berto as well as the talent. And you said something too that after what had happened in Haiti, he said he couldn't go into the ring. And you said, whoa, wait a minute here, man. There's certain fights that you have to fight unless you did yourself. You talked about Ollie Frazier once, and you questioned.
He backed out of fighting Shane Mosley.
Okay.
That's what happened with the whole Haiti situation. The fight with Mosley never happened.
Right, exactly.
Was this?
It never happened. Andre Berto. He chose to back out of the fight, supposedly, because he went to the Haiti relief situation.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. You questioned his heart and his sincereness as not only as a champion but a fighter. Because you said, "Hey, man, Hal, come on, Hal." You said there's some fights that have to be fought, and that was the fight that should have been and had to be fought, Hal.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when you're a top athlete and you believe in what you're doing. And you want to show the world that you are definitely a warrior. You know, you just this person, like something cannot stop you from doing it. You take your situation on your shoulder and you just go in there and do what you got to do. And like I said, Ali said something to everybody. He said, "If my kids died in an airplane," and says when he's getting ready to fight Joe Frazier, he said, "If my kids died in an airplane right now," he said, "I cannot stop this fight." He said, "I will have to still go through with this fight. This fight still has to go with him and Joe Frazier." That's a serious statement to be made. All right?
That's a very serious statement to be made. Well, I got another one for you. How about Bobby Chacon when his wife killed himself? He still went out and fought and won the fight.
Right.
You know what I mean? And his wife had just killed herself. So, you know, this kid goes out to some relief, Haiti relief situation, and he cans the fight.
Yeah, you just gotta make those steps that you know even with Buster Douglas when he fought Mike Tyson,
his mother died
that's
amazing right here. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, I say it with pride, I'm bragging, but you can't touch my cool. I mean, you're hearing things here that you won't hear any place. You're learning things here you can't learn any place. And these are things that are right there. I mean, a man lost his mother. A man's wife killed herself. And I mean, these are just footnotes of validating what they're saying. At the same time, you're learning right here on Sports in Depth, on Blog Talk Radio, on the Sports and Guard Radio Network, the Cisco Kid, Lady A, held by Howard Weston Jr. Oh, Muscles. And Lady and Hal, we got some fights coming up, okay? And Lady A was saying the reason why that Alvarez was fighting Anguna because he didn't want to fight Laura, who would beat him. And Cisco just said, "Hey, listen, we got time. We got the show going. Let's cut to the chase." We've got Bradley Pacquiao, too. It seems that Aram keeps, you know, this revolving circle of fights in top rank. Now, what happens here with Muscles? Let you go first. Why did this fight come about, and does Bradley win this fight the second time?
Unless he shoots Pacquiao, I don't think he's gonna win because unless he shoots Pacquiao or he pulls a Marquez, we saw Marquez who came close to beating Pacquiao a few times, right? Still lose the decision, and the only way he actually got a win was by knocking out Pacquiao the controversial situation is going to come back to bite him, because if the fight is close, even if it's in Bradley's favor, they're still going to give it to Pacquiao because of that. I mean, you got to look back at Lennox Lewis and Holyfield.
Exactly. There's no way Evander could have won that second fight because they were going to give that second fight to
him. And I thought Evander won the second fight. You know, I thought he fought a much better fight against Lennox Lewis that second time.
Sure did.
And, you know, but like I said, you know, because of the first fight, because of the controversy, the judges are going to favor, you know, the fighter that should have won. And Pacquiao, you know, I mean, I think Bradley is a stylistic problem for Pacquiao. But we saw it in the first fight. You know, even though a lot of people felt that, you know, Pacquiao should have won that fight, I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it that, you know, I thought that Pacquiao maybe should have won, but still, Bradley gave him fits in a lot of areas. And I think he's going to give him, I think he's going to come more confident. I think Bradley's going to come in more confident this time around, being that he beat Marquez soundly, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it's you know, we still have the Floyd Mayweather and Pacquiao drama that's going on between the two. I believe that Floyd Mayweather is going to end up fighting Maidana, you know, instead of Khan. You saw what he did.
We were talking about that.
You saw what he posted today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you saw what he posted today with who he wants the fans to choose, and nobody's gonna. The fans are not gonna choose Khan. You know what I mean? Unless Floyd does. And,
really?
And either
why?
Way,
I don't think
Floyd should be fighting either one of those guys. I think if Floyd says that he's the greatest of all time, he should fight Lara. You know?
Oh my God. You read my mind. I cannot believe
it. He should fight Lara.
Muscle, answer the questions and leave the psychic stuff alone, okay? All right?
He should fight Lara. He shouldn't, you know, he's the best ever, the greatest fighter of all time, better than Ali, better than Ray Robinson, better than all these guys. But then he wants to fight Connell or Maidana, guys that are beatable. You know what I mean? I mean, he went after Victor Ortiz. Look at Victor Ortiz. Does Victor Ortiz deserve a fight against Floyd Mayweather? Hell no. You know, did Robert Guerrero deserve a fight against Floyd Mayweather? Hell no. I can see the Canelo fight because of money, but Canelo didn't deserve that fight either. You know what I mean?
No.
But I tell you this much, he would never fight Lara. He would never fight guys like that. Because he knows stylistically he's a problem, you know? He can't look so good, and he can't look so great against guys, especially a Cuban who's a standout, amateur standout, and also the guy can fight. We saw him stop Angulo, you know, a guy that was 20 pounds heavier than him, and he stopped him, you know? So Canelo pretty much chose Angulo, So he could finish off what Lara started.
Now, okay, Lady A, okay, he does that. Alvarez wins again. Ray, my goodness. Mayweather has three fights after whoever he decides to pick. So could we find a possibility of him and Alvarez doing it again? It's a fight that would sell. So if Alvarez beats Angulo, he says, hey, I wasn't right that night. I want Floyd again. Do you see that happening, Lady A, and would the fans buy that fight again?
Yeah, the money's always there when you're talking about those two together, obviously. When you saw it the first time, I mean, who's to say the second time it's not going to be that or more? I'm just getting tired of seeing these second and third fights. I mean, why? What is it, the time? I had a conversation with Cisco about this too. If he's that good, stop fighting guys at 147 and go to fight guys at 154. And fight them then at the legitimate weight at 154.
Exactly.
Why are you fighting at the catch weight? Fight them at 154. What are you so good at?
Look at Cotto.
Hey, back down. Cotto's the guy is the greatest fighter of all time.
Why are you right?
No, you know, the truth is
hey,
that,
Muscles, stop picking on the brother, baby. Stop picking on the brother.
you know, when people say stuff like that, too, it's like, you know, black fighters dominated the sport of boxing. You know what I mean? If you're going to talk about, you know, his boxing history, you know, black fighters uh-huh. are pretty much the dominant source of boxing history, period. So Floyd Mayweather can't even go there. You know, I know he tries to use the race card a lot himself. You know, he talks about he's so hated.
Let's not get Harold started. Calm down now.
But the reason why he's so hated, of course, is because the guy's doing what Roy Jones was doing back in the days, which was that's why HBO didn't match that contract he had with Showtime, because they knew what Floyd was going to do. I mean, they saw what Floyd was doing already. Same thing with Roy Jones was doing, picking and choosing opponents that nobody wanted to see, and he was being paid millions of dollars. And Showtime is going to end up losing in the long run, because either opponent he gets, nobody's going to want to see this shit.
Mm. Well, they lost money on the last two fights he had already on Showtime.
Well, the Canelo fight made the money, but the Guerrero fight lost the money, about $12 million or more.
The two pay-per-view fights Floyd had, they lost money on both of them. They did not draw as much as they thought they were going to.
No, they did. They did. They broke the record for Floyd and Oscar De La Hoya, so actually...
Oh,
they
that fight,
make,
yeah.
yeah.
I'm talking about the six-fight deal he's got, the five-fight deal.
That's why...
They cashed out. I think they cashed out. They didn't want Canelo so soon. That's why they made a catchweight. You know what I mean? Because they didn't want that fight so soon.
But would you tend to agree with me, Cisco, for what I'm saying? If you're that much of a champion, then fight him at the regular weight at 154.
The Floyd pundits would always make an excuse. Why should he have to move up? He's not really a middleweight, or he's not really a junior middleweight.
Your muscles, then why is he fighting guys that's not really their weight? If he's not really
exactly.
their weight, the point here is, and I'm telling you something, though. It's sad and touching that I spoke to a person who's supposed to be a renowned person of intellect. Floyd Mayweather is an elite fighter. Floyd Mayweather cannot be uttered remote in the same breath with Ray Leonard. Okay, Ali, Duran, Robinson couldn't beat Aguayo, couldn't beat Harold.
When you got a guy like Paulie Malignaggi, you know, running his mouth talking about, oh, Floyd is the best fighter ever. You know what I mean? That I've ever seen, and pretty much saying that he would have beaten all these guys. You know,
and Paulie said that if you don't see that. Paulie said if you don't see that, and when Paulie made this statement, this validated to me why he's broadcasting, because he's definitely punch drunk. If you don't see that, I mean, who's he talking to?
The truth is this. One guy I was talking to said it best. Just because a guy possesses great skill doesn't mean he's going to win a fight. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard possessed better boxing skills than Duran, but he still lost that first Duran fight, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And,
you know,
and the thing about that fight, too, is what you realize.
The fact of the matter is,
weight classes,
it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter if, look, Floyd Mayweather looks as good as he does because he picks opponents that he knows that he can do this stuff on. If he knew he couldn't get away with some of the bullshit that he does, he wouldn't have chosen these guys to fight. He never fought Paul Williams. He never fought Vernon Forrest. He never fought Winky Wright. He never fought Katsuzu. He never fought a lot of guys that I could keep going on and on that he didn't fight.
Let's back up. Did he somehow make a mistake and almost paid for it fighting Zab?
Fight who?
No.
No.
You know, the thing with Zab is, and as we see through his history with Zab, is that Zab mentally is weak. You know what I mean? He's not. He quit against Khan. He quit against Clotty. You know, he fought an okay fight against Garcia, but look what happened against Paulie. You know what I mean? Mentally, Zab Judah is mentally weak. He possesses great skills. He's never kept himself in great condition. And mentally, like I said, you take the mental game out of it, he's lost. I mean, he just got beat up by Paulie Malignaggi, for Christ's sake. You know, it shows you that Floyd knew what he was doing. Actually, before this whole Floyd fight happened with Zab Judah, there was a videotape circulating with Floyd kicking the crap out of him in a sparring session. So Floyd already knew that he could beat Zab. You know what I mean? That's why he chose Zab. And got to remember this. He turned down Margarito. To fight Boldemir and to fight Zab Judah. He kept saying that, who is Margarito? But who the hell was Boldemir? At least at that time, Margarito was undefeated for a few years. And it was world champion.
And we didn't know about the plaza. Gentlemen, ladies, you know, give me just a second here.
It doesn't matter. Paul Williams still fought him and beat him.
Yeah, on the trusted guard. In other words, as we know, quick things here. We got a re-mention here. We got a good 2 minutes left to go. But part of the pictures in our collage, the Super Bowl that happened yesterday, Joe Namath threw the coin out and still won the great Super Bowl ball with an upset win. Peyton Manning, well, didn't win another Super Bowl, still the best quarterback around, and we talked about his legacy and disappointments earlier with Cedric Folk, NFL 4-1 Raymond. Russell Wilson becomes the second African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Seattle is the fourth youngest team ever to win a Super Bowl. Black history-wise, we're talking about Jim Brown, the birthday this month. When you talk about Jim Brown, you talk about a man now making him the greatest running back of all time, the greatest fullback of all time, greatest football player of all time, and birthday month also of his good friend, his best friend, Bill Russell, has a birthday this month. Bart Starr was the first NFL, first Super Bowl MVP, and he was MVP back-to-back. I don't know if anybody's won it back-to-back. Bart Starr won MVP the first two Super Bowl games. Packers beat the Oakland Raiders, and they beat the year before that the Kansas City Chiefs. Met Minnesota with a great man. Kevin Durant, here's something I wanted to say to Lady A. And I don't understand this, and I'm going to get back to Kevin in a minute. We also have Richard Sherman, and, you know, it's amazing. Let me say this, you know, it's amazing how Sherman was this thug. You know, and I'm looking at Sherman. Let me see. Okay, there's white guys with long hair. Okay, all right, there's white guys that speak out. Okay, there's white guys that, what's the difference here? Ah, a black guy is saying this. That's why he's a thug. You know what I mean? If you watch the video, he went over to Crabtree, then again, hey, man, a great game. Crabtree pushes him in the head. Now, what did he say that wasn't so? Hey, man, he cut about Crabtree. He won the, hey, you can walk the walk. You talk, the greatest columnist in our country right now, the great, the one only, Bill Reardon talked about that, you know, a quarterback has to have a certain amount of swagger. Reardon was funny. He said that he was the cornerback on his college team, and he said after the first couple of games, the coach came over and informed him that he alone had allowed more points scored than the entire defense did the year before. He was still funny to himself. But he talked about the fact that, hey, you know, this guy, the perception of him being a thug, only came down because he was black. I mean, you know, a white guy talks like this, and it's, you know, you can speak out, land of the free, home of the brave. And Richard Sherman, though, has got the last laugh. He got a lot of publicity, and his team won the Super Bowl also.
Good for him, though.
Talking,
I said good for him. Good for him. I mean, I heard that Kaepernick, I heard that Colin, and I don't, again, don't misquote me, but I just overheard somebody saying something about Kaepernick was saying something after the comments that, you know, Sherman had made. And I'm saying to myself, why is Kaepernick even speaking when Sherman's going to the Super Bowl and he's sitting at home watching it on TV? Like, what do you have to say? Nothing, and now he's a Super Bowl champion, and Kaepernick has definitely nothing to say. So, I think the press had a way of making this more than what it was. You know,
You know what it is. It's the same old black white situation. More importantly,
not entirely. I just think that not entirely, because you want to turn around and call Sherman a thug, but he's a Stanford a Stanford graduate. He's not
a stupid kid.
He's highly intelligent, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's accomplished more than anyone that actually lived in his own old neighborhood had accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the kid definitely has the right to have a swagger, especially from coming up from where he came from, okay? He extends his hand
to say
to the guy, listen, you know,
great game.
Right, great game. And now they got to turn around. The guy turns around, smooshes him in the face. Obviously, you get him right after this where he's already upset about what happened. You put the microphone in his face, and you don't expect him to react. He's a human being. You don't expect him to react like he's angry about it? Stop.
Well, he's too close.
And needless to say, the coach from San Francisco and him already had issues in the past. So
The fuel was there. That's right.
Right.
The fuel was there, and it was a fire that was already started by them. And now Kaepernick, I can understand Kaepernick sort of trying to defend his teammate, but here's the bottom line: who threw the ball at it that he made the play on? Kaepernick.
Thank you. Right.
That's the bottom line. You know what I mean?
Right.
And once again, you know, we say it's not black and white. It is. I mean, here's a guy. Why is the perception of Tim Thug? Why is the perception of him being a guy from Stanford that's not an intellectual? Why is the perception of him being out of line? Same old situation here. I want to get back real quickly to that Kevin Durant thing. And Lady A, I don't understand this, Lady A. I'm befuddled. The guy is averaging 30 points a game. He's got 26 points. And you set him down for the whole fourth quarter. You couldn't let him get four more points? Like you know what? Well, no. He's going to get a shot at the record next year. I don't understand it. How did you not let Kevin Durant get four more points to strike going? I do not understand it, and there's no explanation for it, Lady A. There's no explanation for it. How do you not let Kevin Durant get the four more points to keep the streak? You had a whole quarter left. There's no explanation for that. Harold, sad and touching, or as they would say in the block, straight up bullshit. Lady A, how do you do that, Lady A?
How do they say it on the block?
Straight up bullshit.
Yeah.
Fuck me, Harold.
Well, I think that, you know, some of these coaches, I don't know what's on their mind. You know, they know a lot of these kids are going for records, which they, you know, they should be, and they should give them that opportunity. And like you said, I don't understand what the coach going to set a guy like a star. The main point of any sport and why people pay the money they pay to come, they come to see a team, but they come to see people on that team play ball.
Star the team.
He's the star of his team. He's supposed to be on the court. He's supposed to be on the court. That's what people paying the money to see him play and everything. And then these coaches are putting him on the sideline. If you say Durant is not going to play today, your ticket sales goes down. But if they say he's going to play, your ticket sales goes up.
They don't tell you he's not going to play until you get to the court. And at the first quarter, say, and not playing today, Kevin Durant. Doc Stanley. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio on the Tuscaloosa Network. We got to get ready to roll out of here. The Cisco Kid is here. The First Lady. Hey, Howard Wilson, join you. Leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today. Have a 10-4 guard tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for the service to others? And favorite space. It's Black History Month, and we'll be doing some features. We'll be back here 11 o'clock on Sunday with our Sports Desk Sunday wrap-up. Lady A, Double Val Howe. We'll all say goodnight. God bless you all. Let's go to Marvin Gaye. We'll take us away. Marvin, please. It's your time now.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time.
When the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
who is willing to try
to save a world?
To save a world
that's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today,
children today,
really gonna suffer tomorrow,
really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame,
what a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live
for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live,
we also, happy birthday, dedicate this show to Dave Zeno, one of the top transit cops in the history of New York City Transit Police Department, one of the top cops from the number one police department in the history of New York City Police Department. Dave DeRay, happy birthday, your friend. Hope you had a great day. I just want to take this time to have your birthday. You are a great human being, great American, and a great New York City fan. And with that, it's time to go. And once again, from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all. Trust in God. And as we do Black History Month, let's listen to Dr. King. Forgiveness is not an occasional act, state of mind. It's not the longevity of one's life, but the quality of one's life. Until a man has found something to die for, life isn't worth living. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for this? Doc Stanley, in the panel, from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all. Trust in God.